Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Frank Moss, Deputy Assistant Secretary of Passport Services at the Department of State. Also joining us in our conversation is Bonnie Glick. Frank, what are some of the biggest challenges for securing passports that you will face in the near future, and how do you plan on overcoming these challenges?
Well, I think the biggest challenges will be dealing simultaneously with the introduction of the e-passport. At the same time, we're dealing with dramatically increasing workload. So the way we're trying to deal with these opportunities, if you will, is we're trying to increase our level of staffing. We're looking at our facilities. We're looking at how we make our facilities more efficient so that we can actually do the work. But the other point is we obviously have to consider that we don't want to simply be rushing the work and doing a poor job of adjudication or introducing vulnerabilities into the system. So we have to keep those in balance. You know, better data sharing with federal agencies helps to ensure that integrity. Targeted use of private sector databases can help as well. It's a holistic approach to the problem, one I think we're doing a pretty good job at. Can we get better? Absolutely. The Government Accountability Office just took a look at us and said, well, here are some areas for improvement. They were absolutely right. We've made those changes, so we now have working relationships with the Terrorist Screening Center, with the FBI that were not there before, and we'll continue to make further improvements. We're not going to simply sit back and just deal with the workload. We're going to make the process both be able to handle more customers, but also do so in a way that has a system that is not just as secure, but is actually increasingly secure in terms of ensuring the integrity of our overall passport application process.
You touched upon earlier the use of technology. How will new technology further ensure the security of our nation's people and borders?
Well, I think that it will in a variety of ways, but one way I'd like to talk about in particular is this introduction of the e-passport. People say to me, well, why are you simply writing putting a fairly expensive computer chip into this integrated circuit into this passport and then writing the same data that's on the data page and then protecting it? Well, what we're trying to do here is really two things. One is one of the vulnerabilities of any passport is that they will get stolen, they will get lost. In the case of the United States, several hundred thousand go missing every year as people travel around the world or lose them in their desk drawer here in the United States. What we're trying to do is to prevent that passport by being used by someone else. So we've already addressed in prior improvements of the process the vulnerability of photo digitization. But now what we want to say is we're not only going to have a physical image of that person on the data page, we're going to have an electronic image of them back embedded in the back cover. That will certainly help. And I think over time it also has another opportunity to help the process by really facilitating the movement of people who have these electronic passports. They will be able to be quickly read. The full image will pop up. And if it's Bonnie, for example, presenting her passport with this embedded chip to the inspector, he will not only be comparing Bonnie to a little 1.5-inch square photograph, he's actually going to see a 5x7 image of Bonnie pop up on his screen. So technology helps. The other way technology helps is it gives you a passport that is simply more robust in terms of security features. There's technology in our current passport that adopts techniques that are used to print U.S. currency that have been embedded in there. There are techniques that we're using in various light spectra so that images appear slightly different under ultraviolet light than they would under normal light. The same thing goes with improvements in inks, optically variable ink. So if you turn it one way, it looks one image, looks to be in one color. You turn it a different way, it looks differently. So, I mean, the point is what we're trying to do is make continuous improvements. And even though this new passport will be our baseline document for probably the next 5 years or so, I'm confident that in 2008 it will have different security features than the one we're prototyping and introducing in the next couple of months.
And that goes along, Frank, with the theme of this constant improvements and the technologies. I'm wondering if you can take a step back and think about the lessons that you've learned from implementing new passports and other initiatives that you've undertaken as Deputy Assistant Secretary that helped to secure our nation's borders.
Sure. Interesting retrospective lessons. Well, I talked earlier about some of the lessons we learned about the privacy issue, where we thought we had a good solution, but the privacy advocates identified some vulnerabilities. They were right. We've tried to fix them. I think the other lesson I've taken away from this process, I guess I can mention actually two or three. One is test more, and test even more. What we have found as we've gone through this process, and we've had a tremendous partnership with the National Institute of Standards and Technology to test our passports as they have gone through various designs, various vendors providing chips, et cetera, and really test them thoroughly and test them not only in the electronic side but also on the physical durability side. So testing has been important. And I guess the last lesson I take away is one that I think many of us experienced. Doing something the first time always seems to take longer and cost more than any of us had expected. When I came to Passport Services 2.5 years ago, I really thought we had the basic building blocks in place to roll out the electronic passport or the e-passport in 1.5 years or so. Well, obviously, I've been here 2.5 years, and we actually are in very small-scale pilot production for some testing we're doing right now. But I think at the end of the day, yes, it has cost more money. Yes, it has taken longer. But I also think we will be coming out with a fundamentally more secure document and one that I think the American people can be very proud of.
So thinking forward now, how do you envision the operations of the Bureau of Consular Affairs and Passport Services in particular to look in 5 to 10 years?
Well, I think you'll have to recognize that the global community will continue to increase. I think that more Americans will be traveling abroad and that more foreigners will be coming to the United States. So I think you're going to see a continued increase in the demand for services on both the visa side and the passport side. And then getting back to that third pillar, if you will, of our business, citizen services, you'll be doing more of that simply because there are more Americans traveling abroad. The second thing is I think you'll just have to see technology coming to play in different ways. We're already looking at what we call our future study in terms of more the visa side of the house and the passport side. But, for example, can we consider techniques of remote interviewing of passport applicants? On the passport side, clearly we'll be considering additional biometric features and how we would implement those and which ones would make sense for a passport. Do we handle biometrics in the same fashion for a citizen as we do for a visitor, things like this? The last point in terms of passport is while we expect passport demand to probably get up in the range of 17 million by 2008, you know, whether that will be sustainable or not, or whether it will back down a little bit to maybe 14 or 15 million as a long-term level, remains to be seen. But I think we certainly have challenges ahead of us, and there's lots of career opportunities in the State Department at large, but I think especially in the area of consular work, and particularly in my case in terms of passport services. We have a lot of work to do to provide services to the American public.
Frank, what human capital changes within your office and at the Department of State would be needed to support these changes?
Well, I think that we have some pretty good metrics on our passport process, and we can tell that basically once someone is trained, we can expect them to adjudicate a certain number of passports a year. And so we're already looking and have received approval, as I said earlier, to hire about 105 new employees right now to help us almost catch up with the recent increases in demand and position us to do more. But of course, it's not just bringing people on board. It's then giving them the tools they need to do the job as effectively and as securely as possible. So, for example, in the area of human capital, we have changes that have been made at the Department of State level. For example, we now bring all of our domestic hires into Washington, the civil service employees this being, for a 2-week orientation program about the State Department, about the role of the State Department in the U.S. government, consular affairs within the State Department, et cetera. I think you can understand what I'm saying. The other thing we're doing is we're doing much more centralized training of our passport specialists. In the past, they were often trained in an on-the-job process. We're now saying, no, we're going to bring them together in courses, give them a baseline amount of training for everyone across the board, and then let them go back to their passport agencies and have that tweaked based on local factors and things of this nature. And then finally, it's going to be continuous training. We're working very hard on the issues of getting the techniques of anti-fraud work out of our fraud offices onto the actual passport specialists. So what we do is we rotate senior passport specialists through our fraud offices so that they pick up the fraud prevention techniques, and then they take them back to their teams and train. So it's a whole variety of initiatives, but we're really trying to give our people the tools they need to deal with the challenges we have ahead of us.
Frank, you've certainly had a fantastic and exciting career in government. What advice could you give someone who's interested in a career in public service?
Very good question. I guess I would say go for it. I really have had, I think, a great career. I mean, I've obviously been at the State Department for about a little over 30 years, traveled all over the world, seen sights, and had experiences that I never expected growing up along the New Jersey shore. I think it's important also that for people who are starting out in their careers in government to not just simply be locked into saying, well, I've been hired to do this and this is what I'm going to do for the next few years or the next decade or something like that, or let alone their entire career. I think it's really important for people to be flexible in their careers, to accept challenges, to look for challenges in some cases. I mean, with the State Department, I think we have a great opportunity, not only on our foreign service side for worldwide service, but we offer hardship assignments oftentimes to our civil service adjudicators to go to places we're having difficulty attracting foreign service bidders to. They can go out there and help us there, acquire skills, and build on those skills. And I've never really found an employee who didn't come back from overseas service enriched by the experience and really a better State Department employee. And the last thing I would say is, you know, be willing to be flexible in what one does in a career. When I described my career before, I jokingly said it looks like I can't keep a job. But in fact, I've probably had four careers in one career at the State Department, and yet all the tools I've picked up along the way have continued to be useful as I've moved forward.
Great advice. We've reached the end of our time, Frank, and so that'll have to be our last question. Thank you for fitting us into your busy schedule today, and we especially want to thank you for your long service to our country in the various roles you've held at the State Department and now as Deputy Assistant Secretary.
Okay, and thank you, Albert and Bonnie, for this opportunity. And I would just like to say to the listeners of this program, just give a plug for one website at the State Department. If you're thinking about traveling abroad or you need information on a passport or a visa, we have a wonderful website at travel.state.gov. Again, that's travel.state.gov. I think you'll find your answers there to almost all your questions. And more importantly, it has information that can help make your overseas travel safe and secure. So please, before you go, stop by travel.state.gov and see what is happening in your destination country or countries. As well, if you want to, go ahead and then use that same website to register with the embassy if you're going to be there for a while. We have an internet-based registration system, and that can help us to provide you services should there be a disaster in that country. Thank you very much.
Great.
I really appreciate this this morning.
Thank you, Frank. This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Frank Moss, Deputy Assistant Secretary of Passport Services at the Department of State. Be sure to visit us on the web at www.businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's fascinating conversation. Once again, that's www.businessofgovernment.org. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Albert Morales. Thank you for listening. And as you enjoy the rest of your day, please remember the men and women of our armed and civil services abroad who can't hear this morning's show on how we're improving their government, but deserve our unconditional respect and support. Thank you.